New York and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic Bee Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and you can also visit our website at www.theorganicbee.com. If you have any questions for our guests, there are many ways you can contact the show. You can post a question on our wall on Facebook, Skype us, send us a tweet on Twitter to @TheOrganicView, or you can contact me directly at June Stoyer on Twitter. On today's show, as we continue our special series called The Neonicotinoid View, my co-host Tom Theobald and I will be joined by Mr. Alan Smith, who is a member of the European Parliament and is also a member of the European Parliament's Agriculture and Rural Development Committee. We will be discussing his position on neonicotinoids as well as the situation with the proposed ban. So I would first like to welcome to the show my co-host, Tom Theobald.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hello, June.
And our guest today, Mr. Alan Smith.
Good Hello, afternoon. Hello, June. Sir. Hi. Nice to hear from you.
Mr. Smith, if you would just take a moment and share with our audience a little bit about yourself and what your position is.
Oh, sure. I'm a member of the European Parliament for Scotland, so that would be the European Parliament, of course, loosely equivalent to the UK Senate in the US. I represent the whole of Scotland, along with five other members. We jointly represent the space as some sort of district within Europe. And I'm a member of the Scottish National Party, so we're left of centre, ecological in our outlook. The distinguishing feature for us, aside from our ideology, is that we want to see an independent Scotland, in that we think one of the world's eldest nations. Our borders haven't changed for hundreds of years. There's 5.5 million of us. We'll be a medium ranking, size-wise, member of the European Union. And we think that Scotland rejoining the world community as Scotland would put us in a stronger position. I'm on the Agriculture Committee. I have been since 2007. So that's all aspects of... I always find it amusing that if you call it agriculture, only so many people are interested. But if you call it food, lots of people are interested. And most people do need to find time for food in their lives. So it's a hugely important committee. We regulate the common agricultural policy of the European Union, how we look after farms, how we look after food, how we look after our citizens, and the trade aspects of food as well, because the global food supply chain is under, frankly, unprecedented pressure. And we saw a few years ago what happened when the interbank lending market broke down. I do truly believe that we're not doing agriculture properly worldwide. We've got bits of the world are stuffed, bits of the world are starved. We have a petrochem-dependent agriculture, which is predicated upon fertilizer and the oil price. And we need to bring this to people's attention, that cheap food cannot be taken for granted, and that there's a lot of real crunchy issues for us to be getting into. So it's a fascinating time. We've just voted through cap reform within the European Parliament, and obviously we've got the neonicotinoids issue to be chewing over as well.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Well, I have read that you've raised some pretty strong criticisms of your colleagues and said that you think they're parroting lobbyist propaganda. And, of course, the beekeepers and others who have been fighting against these for years are delighted to hear that from a representative. But could you just explain to the listeners how you came to feel that way?
Well, it's I have an open door policy to anybody who wants to brief me from any point of a political or ideological perspective. It's my job to be open to ideas and information, but it's also my job to retain a critical intellect myself, and I know propaganda when I see it. And a number of the studies which we've seen, particularly over neonicotinoids, we all agree that the science is imperfect. We all agree that more research is necessary. But there have been some studies which I think the methodology and the way that the studies were rather teleological in their conclusions has been accepted by a number of MEPs. The one study which leapt out was the Humboldt study, which found a variety of things about neonicotinoids. And then in terms of who had produced the report, how the report had been produced, who was actually paying for it, there was a great deal of lobbying behind that. And the best impartial opinion which we have is the EFSA opinion, the European Food Safety Agency, which has, I would summarize it as saying that there is a case to answer on neonicotinoids. And I think it's dangerous when politicians rely too much on outside information. It is our job to take all information in, of course, but I think a number of my colleagues have been far too uncritical in terms of repeating and thereby lending credence to what, in my view, is rather slanted and biased surveys.
Is there a way for, I guess, the public to submit critical scientific research that has been conducted independently and peer-reviewed to the European Parliament?
Anybody can send us an email, individually or collectively. All of our emails are on the public record. All of our meetings are web-streamed. All of our meetings are transparent and accountable. And I get upwards of 350 emails a day on various subjects from some people are constituents, some people are interested in topics that I'm working on. But there's also formal ways in which we can commission research. We've got the scientific officers of the Parliament who will do research into these sorts of areas. And one of the things which I think has been tricky with the neonicotinoids issue is that it is hugely complex and the science is imperfect. And this is where I certainly agree with the point that more research is necessary. But the question for me is that, well, does that mean we shouldn't act until we're definite, or should we act on a precautionary basis?
Could you share with our audience who the agencies are that are in charge of environmental safety in Europe?
Well, there's primarily it's the member states. EU law is passed on an EU level, on an EU basis for 500 million people, but then it's implemented by the member states, the local or national authorities, depending upon the constitutional provisions of each of the member states. On neonicotinoids, the key agency has been EFSA, the European Food Safety Agency, which has been looking at this from an environmental, but also from a food perspective, in that neonicotinoids being treated in the production of our food, that's within their remit. So they've been looking at that. And then SCOFCA is the Standing Committee on Food and Animal Health, which is a committee of experts within the European Commission and also across the member states as well. So those are the two bodies that have been looking at this. But always worth remembering that within the EU, all member states are pari passu and all member states are in charge. So it's very much been implemented through the member state authorities.
Thank you. Can you also explain to our audience what is the process involved in order to elect a ban?
Well, there could be various ways of doing it. It's the European Commission, in this case, has come up with proposals for a ban on the basis of the scientific risk assessment, which was carried out by EFSA. And then the European Commission proposes that to SCOFCA, which is 27 member state representatives. And it's up to them to vote either for, against or abstain on the ban, and that's where the votes went 9-4, 9 against and 9 abstentions, and that means that there wasn't a majority for a ban, so a ban has not thus far been implemented. But certainly I would be keeping up the pressure to have that discussed at the next meeting and hopefully implemented.
When is the next meeting?
It's in May. I couldn't tell you the precise date, but the meeting's in May, so I think there is some time to be had to have that discussion about what more research do we need commissioned, do we need to task EFSA with a specific series of questions, peer review some of the other research that the national organisations are doing. I'm aware that the UK authorities are commissioning some research as well, which is very much to be welcomed. And we need more science on this, not less. Evidently, the weight of opinion across the member states is that they are not as willing to be precautionary as I am. I think that's regrettable, and I certainly will keep up that pressure. But we all agree, and we all do agree, that we need more science in this.
What's been reported over here is that the vote last week has sort of put things in limbo. We've also been told that ultimately the European Commission is really obligated to follow the law, to follow the precautionary principle over the potential objections of some of these countries. Could you discuss that?
Well, that's true as far as it goes, but the European Commission can only implement what is agreed by the member states. So if the member states do not agree a ban, then no ban happens. And that's where we are presently. Limbo is a good description for it, frankly. It's the ban proposal remains a proposal, but until such time as the member states agree to implement it, and that's the 27 individual member states acting collectively within the council, then the commission cannot force that to happen.
Don't they have 2 more months to defend their position? And if they can't do that, doesn't the precautionary principle take precedence? In other words, there are certain criteria that must be met. For example, that these pesticides can't remain in the ground for more than 120 days.
Well, there's an argument that my difficulty with the precautionary principle is that you could use it to justify not getting out of your bed in the morning in a legal context. I'm a lawyer by profession myself. I find it tricky. I think any prospect of a ban needs to be based on very, very concrete evidence. And my attitude to the such research that exists on neonicotinoids is that there is a case to answer. And in the event the science proves that we've been overcautious, well, we can relax the ban. And what we implement, we can amend and alter. I think the real discussion with the member states is at the next and in the run-up to the next COFCA meeting. I don't believe that the European Commission can somehow press a nuclear button that says this is going to happen whether the member states want it to or not. I just don't think we're going to get there.
I see.
Mr. Smith, what do you think is going to happen at the next meeting?
Well, that's a degree of crystal ball gazing, but I think the member states that were most vociferous against a ban will need to explain and defend their position, not least to their citizens, as they're now coming under pressure from concerned citizens about the effect of bees. That some things are facts. That it is a fact that colony collapse disorder and bee health has been declining. There must be various environmental, wider chemical factors to that. Neonicotinoids, I think, have a case to answer, that we need more research. More research is being commissioned, so I think that's to be welcome. I'm not aware of any studies which are due before the next meeting, but certainly it would be really helpful if a credible, impartial organisation would be able to come up with more of a study and more science than we've seen to date. But certainly it was, as I say, 9-9-9, 9-4, 9 against, 9 abstentions. So the member states who abstained, why did they abstain? And that I think it's a curious position for a member state to have, that we're not really going to venture a view one way or the other. So I'd like to see them firm up their position, actually, for or against, depending upon what in integrity and good faith they think is the best thing to do. But this is a very live discussion. This is a very dynamic discussion, and we'll see how the next meeting goes. But certainly in terms of predictions, I think there is a case to answer, and I think in due course all the member states will come to accept that view.
Mr. Smith, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the show today. I hope that we can have you back on after the next meeting occurs and continue the discussion.
Yes, we're all watching very closely.
Well, likewise, this is a global issue, and the impact of pesticides on the wider environmental health, long-term effects of low doses on insects, animals, and indeed humans. This is evolving science, and we're paying close attention to data coming out of the U.S., Australia, and worldwide, because the more science we share, the more science we all have, and that can only improve. So happily keep the communication going. Keep in touch.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you very much.
Also joining us today is environmental author and beekeeper, Mr. Graham White, who has been campaigning against neonicotinoids and is going to explain the recent developments in Europe with the proposed ban. So I would like to welcome to the show Mr. Graham White. Good afternoon, Graham, and thanks for joining us.
Well, greetings from Scotland.
Graham, can you share with our audience about your background and also your involvement with the beekeeping community in Europe?
Yeah, my background is that I was an environmental educator for about 20 years working in schools, and I spent a lot of time in America getting to know about John Muir and the national parks, and came over here and was instrumental in starting something called the John Muir Award, which is an environmental award for people of all ages. And along the way, I somehow got involved in beekeeping in about 1994, and I've been keeping roughly about 10 hives a year ever since then. But my bees began to die in about 2004, and for example, this year I've got 2 hives left out of the 10 I went into the winter with. So the effects of pesticides here are catastrophic, and I don't want to be a campaigner. I have no choice. Otherwise, soon there'll be no bees, no birds, nothing left.
Thank you.
Graham, this is Tom Theobald.
Hi, Tom.
Your European Food Safety Authority has recommended a ban on 3 systemic pesticides, 3 neonicotinoids, and we've all been watching this very closely, and I wonder if you could explain for the listeners what the scientific process was that led up to this decision and what role EFSA plays in this drama.
Sure. The thing to understand is that Europe is a combined union of 27 member states. In the same way you have 50-odd states in the United States, there are 27 countries as part of the European Union. And so there's Britain, France, Germany, Spain, Latvia, Lithuania, and so on and so on. And they come together to on certain issues which are communal issues. So, for example, if a pesticide is to be licensed in the European Union in all 27 member states, they need a very, very high-level scientific body to assess that pesticide, to decide whether it's safe, and then to make recommendations as to whether it should be licensed or not. Now, the agency that we created to do that is called EFSA, which is the European Food Safety Agency. And that's kind of like the USDA and the EPA combined. It's a whole bunch of scientists from every single country and the very, very top levels of science it's possible to get in the modern world. Now, the important thing to understand is EFSA was asked to look at the neonicotinoid pesticides, which have been in use since 1992, as a result of catastrophic bee declines in Europe. The French government banned neonicotinoids in 2000 after they lost 1 million beehives in a single year. That was in about 1996. And many other countries have imposed bans on neonicotinoids. Germany has banned some of them. Italy's banned some. The UK has never banned any. So EFSA recently, because of the continuing furore, was asked to take a complete look at this from scratch. So they appointed a scientific panel of about 50 or 60 major scientists from every country in the European Union, and they looked at every single scientific study that has been done going back to 1999. So they looked at something like 60 or 70 major scientific studies. Now, this is the vital thing to understand. This is not a matter of choice. There is a law. There is a European directive on pesticides, and there are 3 tripwires. That's what I would call them, in the European directive. And if these 3 tripwires are breached, an automatic guillotine comes rumbling down and chops off the head of that particular pesticide. And that guillotine is called the precautionary principle. And there's a lot of misunderstanding about this, that people think that the precautionary principle is a matter of choice. It's not. It's an automatic guillotine. The 3 tripwires that are applied to any pesticide that EFSA looks at are, firstly, does this pesticide cause any harm to honeybees? And EFSA concluded after looking at 60 reports, all 3 of these pesticides are extremely toxic to honeybees. So that's the first tripwire tripped. The second one is, does this pesticide persist in the soil for more than 120 days, which is illegal? And the answer was, imidacloprid, clothianidin, and thiomethoxam all persist in the soil for between 2 to 4 years. So the second tripwire was broken. And the third tripwire, which in many ways is the most important, is, are there any data gaps? Are there gaps in the knowledge about how this pesticide affects the environment, bees, butterflies, human beings? And the answer from looking at those 60 reports was that EFSA concluded, in each of these pesticides, there are massive data gaps because the methodology that was used to assess them back in 1992 would never have found sublethal effects, chronic poisoning exposure, and so on. So the three trip wires were broken, and EFSA then went to the European Commission, which is the almost the sort of presidential body in Europe, and said, the three trip wires have been broken. The precautionary guillotine comes rumbling down. You must ban these pesticides. They didn't do that as a matter of choice. That's the law. So the European Commission then called together the 27 member states and said, our expert scientists have looked at the science, and they've recommended that we ban these three pesticides because they're extremely toxic to honeybees. That's fully proven. They persist in the soil for up to 4 years. That's fully proven. And there are massive data gaps. There is stuff we do not know about how these pesticides affect birds, how they affect bumblebees, how they affect frogs, and so on. So the European Commission said, well, that's the law. The guillotine's coming down. And they recommended that they be banned. Now, the vote was taken in the European Parliament last Friday, and the vote was passed. It's important to grasp this. 13 countries voted to ban the pesticides. Only 9 voted against, and 5, including the UK and Germany, abstained. But the rule is that you have to have what's called a qualified majority. In other words, the vote for banning them has to be bigger than the vote against, including the abstentions. So that's where we are now.
Graham, I'm a little confused because one of the biggest arguments for not moving forward with the ban is that there's a lack of scientific evidence. And basically what you've just described substantiates the fact that there is a significant amount of scientific data available to render this decision.
That's correct. The expert scientists from all 27 countries looked at every paper that's been published since 1999, and they concluded, as I said, that there was massive evidence, absolutely 100% confirmed, that these pesticides are deadly for honeybees, bumblebees, and other pollinators. The data gap is that nobody ever, when these pesticides were being registered, nobody ever asked the question, is there sublethal poisoning that happens over a long period of time? Nobody ever conducted a full one-year-long life cycle test. That has never been done. So we don't know what the effects of these pesticides are on queens, on egg laying, and on the brood in the hives. That's never been tested. And that is all that is required for the precautionary principle to be activated. That's exactly why it exists. It exists to say, if the public interest is threatened because we don't know enough about a certain pesticide, then we invoke the precautionary principle because it's better to be safe than to be sorry. And the governments who are trying to wriggle out of it, the reason the governments are wriggling out is because the UK government is under enormous pressure from Syngenta, from Bayer, from the Farmers Union, who all desperately want to keep these pesticides because they don't give a damn about bees. And the European Union is saying, well, it's our job to take the higher moral level. You know, the public good is more important than the profits of a pesticide company or even the profits of a farmer. So we are going to impose this ban. And that's because there is uncertainty. That's the precautionary principle comes into automatic play when there is scientific uncertainty about something of enormous public health importance. And that's exactly what this is.
Graham, there was a vote last Friday. You touched upon that a little bit. Maybe you could explain more about the political influences here and what that represents, how that all comes together, and what the future may hold, what's yet to come. Because we're being told that this really wasn't a decision against the ban, that things are in limbo, but we're not quite sure from other parts of the globe just what the future holds. Could you explain that to us?
Sure. The situation is this. When the European Science Agency, EFSA, makes a decision as important as this and makes a strong recommendation to the presidential body, in effect, to the Commission, the presidential body has to take this forward, regardless of what the 27 member states think. So the presidential body recommended a ban. The 27 states delivered a majority, but not an absolute majority. So now what happens is, the Commission has the right to appeal the decision, okay? And the Environment Commissioner, who's the man in charge, has said it's extremely likely that they will. This has happened many times before. And what will happen then is in 2 months' time, there will be a repeat of the vote. If the vote stays the same and there's a simple majority this time, it doesn't have to be a qualified majority the next time. If a simple majority is achieved the next time, the ban will be imposed. The European Commission has the right to impose the ban against the will of the 27 member countries. And it's important to grasp this has happened many, many, many times before. Almost all the good environmental legislation we have in Europe on pollution of the sea, pollution of rivers, pollution of towns and cities and so on, all that legislation has been opposed tooth and nail by the member countries. Some member countries didn't want to cut down their environmental pollution for industrial reasons or profit reasons. And in every case, the vote has often failed the first time, and then the European Commission has said, well, we don't care what you say, this is for the public good, and if we get a simple majority, the ban will be imposed. And all of the politics that I'm reading says that is what they intend to do. So it's extremely likely that in 2 months' time, the ban will be imposed regardless of what the UK says. But the other important point to grasp is there is enormous groundswell of citizen action building up like a giant wave. In the UK, a number of very, very important environmental bodies have suddenly woken up and started to fight for a ban. The Royal Society for the Protection of Birds, which has 1 million members, has announced that it's campaigning for a ban. The 47 wildlife trusts that cover the entire country and the Royal Wildlife Trust itself are campaigning for a ban. They have about 500,000 members. The Women's Institute, which has 6,600 branches in every town and village in the UK, has announced that it is campaigning for a ban. And all the European institutions, the Science Agency, the Commission, and so on. So we've got an enormous groundswell of citizen action and citizen opinion. And the job in the next 2 months is to get all of those people to lobby the UK government and their MPs and say, this is an absolute disgrace that you are not following the advice of the highest level of scientific advice in Europe, and you're opposing the ban which the Commission is advising the UN act. And that's exactly what's going to happen. You're going to see the entire population of Europe waking up to the threat to bees from neonicotinoid pesticides.
Thank you, Graham. We're beginning to see just a little of that here in the United States. In fact, there is a briefing before Congress for the American Bird Conservancy. They've recently released a report showing a dramatic declines in grassland birds, which they attribute to pesticides in general and to the neonicotinoids in more specifically. So we're beginning to see that same sort of awakening here in the United States.
Well, that news just broke here, and it's very, very big news indeed, because we've lost nearly 80% of all our farmland birds in the last 20 years, and everybody is in denial, complete denial about why it's happening. And we know it's because there are no insects for the birds to eat, because the pesticides have killed them.
Graham, what do you think will happen if this ban does not go through?
I honestly believe there is virtually no chance of the ban not going through. If this ban did not go through, there would be a revolution. People are so angry about this. I've just got an email in from Europe that the members of the European Parliament are absolutely beside themselves with anger, because the European Parliament recommended the ban. Once EFSA delivered the scientific report, the European Parliament said, well, that's the science. It's absolutely clear. We are recommending a ban, and the Parliament recommended the ban, so the Commission and the Presidential Commission, if you like, recommended the ban to the 27 member states. So virtually every politician in Europe, a member of the European Parliament, is for this ban, particularly the Green Party. And many, many countries, you know, France voted for the ban, Spain voted for the ban, I'm trying to think, Holland, the Dutch Parliament, the Polish Parliament, they all voted for the ban. But
the UK and Germany.
Well, the UK.
They did not vote.
Well, that's because Bayer is based in Germany and has enormous political power. Bayer exports about $2 billion worth of imidacloprid alone to the rest of the world. So it has enormous implications for the German economy, and they have huge clout there. Syngenta has enormous political clout in the UK. And our Minister of Agriculture, you know, he might as well wear a hat with Syngenta written on the front. That's who he's there to represent. The problem is he doesn't represent the 70 million people, oh, sorry, 60 million people who live in Britain, who want to save their birds, they want to save their bees, and they want to eat food that isn't contaminated with neurotoxic pesticides.
Graham, thank you so much for joining us today. And folks, thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic Bee Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.